June 6, 2021. It's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Pedro Show, happy Tuesday. Start off John Coltrane, live. 1961, every time we say goodbye to Mason Jones is What If. Brother Matt, I got to see him. Brother Vince's a couple days ago for a start, 16 months. We're going to start a project. Pictures from the Pleasure Point. But in the meantime, here's Watt and his bed. But I'm not totally man alone, people, because those Skype engineers in Estonia with their software. Mason Jones, welcome aboard, Mason.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, music from you that you flowed. You flowed me a whole bunch of good stuff. And this is called What If. But ellipse, not question mark. So it's like, it's going to be what if. It's no question about it. Now, I'm interested in your journey through music, so please bring me your earliest musical recollection, Mason.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. I mean, I like most kids, I guess, I played around with a bunch of different instruments when I was young and sort of settled on the guitar for a bit and then kind of quit guitar for all of high school because I kind of shifted from just noodling around to taking some music lessons and classical lessons and somehow took the fun out of it for just a little bit.
Yeah, but can we go back a little further? Like before you started fucking playing, like what's the earliest impression music went on you?
Yeah, it's funny. My parents were not super into music that much, but the first album I remember buying was Sgt. Pepper's.
Ah, Beatles.
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff going on. Pretty dense record. And the first gig you went and saw, Mason?
First gig I went to see was actually not till college with my wife, before she was my wife, New Wave Days. We went to see The Fix.
Whoa, with two X's.
Yep.
New Wave Days. You didn't see a gig till college. Okay, you know.
Yeah.
Like Orson Welles said, no wine before it's time. Right. So Joe Baez started guitar at 27 years old. You know, I think Vincent painted only his last 10 years of his life. So, whenever it happens, it happens. So I'm supposing then, which is dangerous, but in the school, the choir, marching band, you didn't do that shit?
I didn't, you know.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah, it's funny.
Now, but you said you did get on the guitar. Now, how'd that happen?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like lots of kids, I was just experimenting with different stuff when I was growing up, doing all these different things. And somehow one of them was taking some guitar lessons, and I really liked it. I was just like strumming chords and doing, folk.
Okay, now how'd you get this guitar? Was it at the pad or was it a gift to you?
Wow, I'm trying to remember. I think my parents got it for me probably because of those lessons, I guess. Yeah, it's just a cheapo acoustic guitar.
Yeah. Okay. And but you liked it, so maybe a good teacher.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I was doing it at the Y when I was living in Michigan.
What part?
Ann Arbor.
Well, Stooges Town. If I was with you in person, you'd probably show me your right hand. And you would point, right?
Show you exactly where I'm from, bet.
That's what Michiganers do, right? They say, they got it right on their fucking hand there. And,
exactly.
I spent some time in Ann Arbor staying with Ronnie a few times.
Nice.
Yeah. And I drove through Ypsilanti, which is actually next door and where Ig's from. But a big college town.
Yeah, it's pretty much the only thing there, yeah.
Right, but a lot of music, right? That's where Jay Maskus asked me to call up Ronnie and say, come on down, and we brought him on tour. It was called The Blind Pig.
Oh, I remember The Blind Pig, bet.
Which is kind of a generic name for speakeasy, but this pad, that was actually its name.
Yeah.
I remember there was one in Champaign, Illinois I played to with that name. So, what about the thing after school, not like graduate, but the afternoon, the bedroom band, the basement band, the garage band, did you do that?
Not in high school, but in college started to do that, you bet. That's when I picked the guitar up again, because I was living in the dorm in Ann Arbor, and walking around, and there were a couple of guys jamming in one of the rooms. And I was like, I should do that again. So I grabbed a guitar again and just started sitting in with them and just jamming terrible blues, you know?
Okay, so it was kind of like a practice band, not really gigs?
Not yet. Not at that time, no.
Okay. So when you finally do a band, is it your band or do you join somebody's band?
I started recording before I started playing out.
Oh, okay, man alone.
Yeah, just doing my thing. You know, having friends like contribute stuff, but really just doing my own recordings. So I didn't do my first show until I moved out to San Francisco.
Now, when you say recording, was it like a four-track cassette or something?
You got it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I didn't know it, but it was a good guess.
Oh, yeah.
So you were actually doing Sound on Sound and having your buddies.
Yeah. I started discovering all this weird music out there and realized that I could kind of try doing it too. And just started recording on the four track.
So you got infected.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and I can point to where it came from, which okay. is a record store in Ann Arbor that I was so lucky to have.
Yeah.
The store called School Kids.
School Kids. There's a famous picture of D Boom wearing one of their shirts.
Yeah, that store, man, I didn't really appreciate it at the time as much as I should have, but whoever the hell was doing the buying there, I owe them so much.
So, without the movement, I don't even think there would have been about the Minutemen. I mean, it's important you develop your own voice, but there's something about a scene, huh, about people getting together. You get infected.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it was weird in Ann Arbor because there, I didn't find that much going on. There was some at the radio station for sure, the U of M radio station, but
yeah.
It wasn't really until I moved to San Francisco that I found more people to kind of, I found a scene, you know?
Right. Well, 70s punk, they were probably second only to New York City. They're much bigger than our scene up in Hollywood.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe because, things are close. I think it's 7 miles across, right?
7x7. Yeah,
the city. So maybe jamming people. And then a lot of cats, it's sort of like the Brooklyn thing, right, where there hardly anybody's from there that's like kind of, with it, right? Because usually if you're around something like that growing up, you take it for granted. It's usually the immigrant, right, the newcomer. He's like, right. So.
Yeah.
Right when you get to the city, Klaus Florey told me the day he got there from Boston, he answered an ad and he was in the Dead Kennedys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, second day. So what about you? Did it take a little while to start playing with people?
Man, it didn't really, I moved here partly because of research, Industrial Culture Handbook.
Awesome. That's why you went to school, not a music major.
Right. I found the research book about industrial music, the Industrial Culture Handbook.
Oh, yeah.
And there was so much from San Francisco, right? Survival Research Labs and Mike and
Target
all
Video.
This stuff. Clearly shit was happening in San Francisco, so... I wanted to be here.
Yeah. Okay, and at this point, you're just a guitar man, were you using kind of the tape recorder as an instrument, too?
Yeah. Sampling, quote-unquote, stuff, taking weird sound effects, putting them on tape, and then moving them around, putting them in the right place, cheapo keyboards, playing drums on a cardboard box or a can or whatever, whatever I could. I didn't have
cardboard box snare drum. Eddie Cochran, Summertime Blues.
On that track, really?
He could not get a good sound with the real snare drum, so he used. Yeah, I read about this years ago. I want to play something that you sent me, an excerpt from a piece called Permanence.
Permanence. Thank you. Thank you.
From Pedro Show, that Chuck the Music started with Mason Jones and an excerpt from his piece, Permanence, was I was enlightened to the fact it's a whole side of an album, people. So that's why we got the excerpt. Well, that ain't stopped other people from, like, flowing on me big time. brand new from Victor Timofeev, from Latvia, Portal of Zin 1. I guess there's a number 2 also. Brand new. And from Pete Kane's new solo album, a tune called Cranky, Righteous Record. Sam Lockward out of Iowa City with Reverie. His buddy Bob Bucko from near Jr., Bob Bucko Jr., no disrespect to his father, nearby Dubuque, License and Registration. Then Rambutan, this is Parallel System, System 18, featuring Mike Griffin, Jefferson Pitcher, Howard Seltzer. No, Stelzer.
Howie Stelzer, yeah. Massachusetts.
Yeah, my fucking, forgive me. Todd Lent and Eric Hardiman. And then finally, a proj, you flow me, Mason, a Culper Ring. I guess track 3, TRKA3?
Yeah, the tracks on that one we didn't give them titles. Everything just kind of flowed together. We put some breaks in the album.
So, back in Ann Arbor, just to back up just a little bit, did you do any performances, any gigs?
I didn't, no.
Okay. Yeah. So your first ones are in the city. Can you tell me about the first one?
Yeah, the very first one, which was actually just reissued on a CD from Tronix Records down in L.A., actually. little bit after I moved here, I hooked up with a bunch of people, partly through Subterranean Records and the folks hanging out around there. And one of them was Eldon M. from Allegory Chapel Limited, who was also working at Subterranean. And he and I just immediately started working together. And so the very first show was under the name I was using at the time, Trance. And I asked him to join me.
You gave me some, but I didn't know the chronology, so I got it at the end of the show. Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
No problem. It's fun to do it all in different order.
Oh, what an idiot. Hey, can I ask you, the boss of Subterranean, did he become a stand-up comedian?
No, not Steve, although I could have seen that. He was the most deadpan guy I've ever known.
Somebody told me that one of those guys became like a stand-up comedian or some shit. Maybe I got it fucked up. That's the trippy thing about Alzheimer's. So you say your first gig is actually coming out on a record? Now, what was this gig?
The gig came out on a CD, a reissue of some old live stuff, just a couple of months ago.
Okay. Well, tell me about the moment. Was it a pants shitter?
It was kind of low stress because it was friends, you know? My friend Rick Rees was organizing some shows at a bar kind of out near the water. Called Olive Oils here in San Francisco. Just doing a series of sort of free music, noise, free jazz, and whatever. And asked me if I wanted to play, and I was like, "Yeah, this seems like time to do my first show. What the hell?"
And what'd you bring? A bunch of like big suitcase full of stuff?
Let's see. For that one, I had my guitar and a couple of effects and this piece of wrought iron railing with a contact mic on it for percussion.
Okay, and it was a one-man band.
It was me. No, it was me and my friend Eldon from Allegory.
Okay.
He joined in. He always does crazy noise sampling stuff.
So what, did he have a pewter, a crap top?
Not back then. No, that's right. It was kind of cool, right? You couldn't do that. So now he had a sampling keyboard. I forget which one.
Okay.
But he would use that.
And it was
great to have someone else on the show with me rather than my first show being purely solo. You know, that would have been junior bracken.
And the material, was it improvised or did you guys work out a bunch of pieces?
Totally improvised.
Okay. Whoa, I would have been scared, but you said it was low stress. Okay.
It was, yeah, because I was playing for friends.
For friends, yeah, that makes a big difference. Well, sometimes I remember being in Little League and having to bat against your friends was,
but, it depends on how competitive the friends are.
Right, because music shouldn't be like sports.
Totally.
Except for fusion. And you cut each other with John Coltrane like an asshole. Okay, so all those recordings you were making in Ann Arbor, now, like you say, this thing has been re-released. Did you start putting this stuff out?
Back when I was in Ann Arbor, I released a couple of cassettes. I was getting into the cassette culture and trading tapes with people and picking stuff up and just seeing what was happening out there. So I did a few tapes before moving out here, and then a few more tapes before doing my first CD.
When you say in the cassette scene, are you talking about like Al Margolis?
Yep. Oh, yeah, no. Al and RR Records and all those guys.
Yeah. Oh, wow, man, it's trippy. I've been meeting all these cats who know each other a long time. And part of a fabric. Okay. And so when you come out to the city, now you're going to start doing gigs, but then you're still part of this thing and putting out the cassettes?
Yeah.
Okay. And how'd that develop?
So I started meeting more and more people, obviously going to gigs here and playing gigs and meeting more people, and decided to put out a compilation. I was getting really into kind of experimental percussion-based stuff, and so I decided to do a compilation of a bunch of people doing that style. and someone talked me into doing a CD. So that was the first CD I pressed up and kind of turned my little tape label into a real label.
Also, you also had a label. Okay.
Yeah.
And then that first gig with the Rod Iron Rail and the contact, that was you doing percussion.
Yeah, doing percussion and guitar, kind of switching.
Right. Did you do them at the same time, or was one or the other?
At that time, it was one or the other. I wasn't, like, you know, a clever looping kind of guy.
I think back then, right, Nell's client told me there was something called the 16-second, some kind of box that you could get the longest, you know, of course it wasn't digital yet, but.
Right, I don't remember a 16-second one, but I still got this old Digitech delay pedal that would do 8 seconds at super low res, crappy sound.
Yeah, this was, I think Memory Man was another version. These were Electro-Harmonics, I think.
But, yeah.
But, you know, the dynamic in-person sound-on-sound thing, right? I know nowadays there's all kinds of digital stuff, and Petra, she'll, like, layer up 8, 9 of her voices, you know, and she's got the perfect pitch, and it's like a whole fucking choir. It's incredible.
Awesome.
Yeah, but okay, the guitar. Who was some of your influences?
Yeah, I mean, when I was first starting out, it's probably not too surprising that, you know, Hendrix, right? Obviously.
Yeah, Jimmy.
You know, not so much the first album or so, but like Axis, Bold as Love, and Electric Ladyland, experimental stuff.
Right. We're spending a lot of time in the studio. I think that first record he did really quick.
Yeah, it was definitely more of a, you know, hey, give us a cool rock record, and it's an awesome rock record. But yeah, he, you know, once he could kind of spread out and spend some time in the studio.
Right, and I think Jack Cassidy's on some of those recordings playing bass.
Yeah.
And even Jimmy played some bass, like I heard he played an 8-string Hagstrom on Third Stone from the Sun.
Yeah,
or something like that. I don't know for sure. There's so many Jimmy stories. The great one is Dick Lloyd, you know, the guy in television. If you read his book, Combustible Everything or whatever, like, Jimmy socks him out. Like, two in the gut, really? One in the face. Then he started, a couple hours later, he saw him in his yellow Corvette, and he was crying and so sorry that he did that. I think he was 13 years old, Dick Lloyd. Yeah. You know, getting socked up by Jimmy, I mean.
That's worth it, right, to have the story.
Okay. And what about, were you listening to stuff like Throb and Gristle?
Yeah. Thanks again to School Kids Records in Ann Arbor. I started finding a bunch of stuff. Me and my best friend were just buying stuff that, you know, the name rang a bell or the cover looked right or something. So, yeah, that's how I got everything from the first Swans album to Test Department to the first Caroliner album, actually. It was in that crazy box with all this weird shit in there, rabbit poop and everything in a bag. Like, what the hell is this? And the music was so surreal. So,
yeah, something about a record store, huh? Something about a record store. Look, Mason, we're at the end of the first hour, July 6, 2021, and this one, Peter Show special guest, Mason Jones. Hold tight for hour two. June 6, 2021. It's the second hour of the Walk for Pedro Show.
Thank you. Oh, Thank you.
Watt for Pedro. She'll start off the second hour. Now, I've mispronounced this name already, people, a couple of episodes ago. We had Chris Cones. In fact, last episode we played this a whole tape of his something with an R. It was Skullraker, though. But anyway, these guys were bandmates, people, and it's a part of the brain.
Subarachnoid space.
See, if I hear it from the master, I can learn. And a tune called Burnshot. Then we have Ben Salter from Tasmania with Bad Luck. Dangerous Guy after that from Lucas Sabella. And then something else from Subarachnoid space, just called C.
Yep.
Explain this proj, Mason.
Yeah, so I started Subarachnoid space in 96 when... I wanted to kind of shift back from doing lots of noise stuff to doing noise in a rock context. And I was setting up a lot of shows for friends in Japan coming over, a lot of really cool psychedelic type bands. And so I thought, well, if I had a band that could play with them, they could use our gear when they come over, and that'd be super convenient. And it'd be a fun project to work on. So kind of inspired by Fushitsusha and Skullflower and, you know, early Sonic Youth type stuff, started Subarachnoid space.
Now, the was it just a two-man band? Because one of the cats, at least, was Chris Cones.
He was briefly in it, yeah. And that was kind of as it, he was in it at the time that I was shifting out of it. But he was, you know, he was around...
Now, it was your band, but you left, like Pete Frampton leaving Humble Pie?
Yeah, so I started it. There was a three-piece originally, and there was a four-piece before we started playing out, added a second guitarist. And after about, what was it, like 7 years or so, nine albums, it was moving in a direction that wasn't quite my thing, but was super cool. And it was a pretty good time for me to start playing out a little bit less and touring a little bit less. So I just said, you know, you guys keep on keeping on.
Yeah.
Which was great.
You know who wrote that to me on a little paper and gave to somebody who gave it to me? John Fogerty. Right when when D Boone got killed. I got this from this kid at a gig. Here, John Fogerty told me to give you this.
And so
I put it on the label of this record, Ifn. Yeah, I mean, when I met D Boone, the only rock band he knew was Creedence, so that meant a lot to get that from him.
Oh, wow.
Here's another prod you gave me. Numinous Eye?
Yep. Yeah, that was actually my sort of continuation of what I was doing in Subarachnoid space when I left that band. I started Numinous Eye as a sort of, I don't know, low stress kind of thing. It's basically been mostly me and whatever drummer is around.
Okay.
Just two-piece guitar and drums making noise.
And stay local in the city, maybe not as many gigs, no touring.
Yeah, just a little bit of touring. Done a couple of tours in Japan.
Okay. Watt for Pedro show. Started that chunk of music with Newman aside. I wish they'd stop smiling like that. Then the brand. We'll get into song titles in a sec. Sophie Dupalais, brand new, slow, steady count. DK after that, not Dead Kennedys, people. This is overseas. Echo Chamber, initials for this cat. And then, again, Newman Assize with Building Dreams. And so with instrumental music, what about titles?
Yeah, I love coming up with the titles. The more surreal, the better. Because what I do is I always have the music first, and then I'm trying to figure out what the title is. And I'll just listen to it and see what floats through my brain, you know?
Okay.
You know, sometimes it'll be scary, sometimes it'll be peaceful, but, you know, something comes along.
But you're trying to let that piece musically inform you.
Definitely, yeah. It's got to be whatever it's telling me.
Right. Now, can I get before that? What about usually, or maybe you have many different ways for composing?
Yeah. An awful lot of my stuff is improv. Just, you know, seeing what comes, recording everything, and then throwing away the stuff that sucks.
Ah, so editing's a big process.
For sure, yeah. From, you know, back when I started Subarachnoid Space, the first couple of albums were just stereo DAT recordings in our practice space. We would just record everything, and then when there was enough good stuff edited out, then there was an album.
Wow. Yeah, kind of like my bass lines. Start off with too much, start whittling.
yeah, totally.
But, you know, why not? It's the other way is harder, a carpenter would tell you. You know, removing the wood is one thing, but trying to put it back, no. So
yeah, I think there's a lot to that.
Now, I'm going to guess you're not using a click track.
Nah.
And, and harmonically, like I heard you use some terms like noise. Well, let's get semantic about it. When does it leave noise and become not noise?
Yeah.
Of course, it's just an opinion, Mason. I ain't going to nail you there.
For sure. And it's an interesting thing I've talked to a lot of people about. You know, for some people, it's when... As soon as there's any structure, it's not noise.
Ah. So
if there's a rhythm, there's not noise. If there's a repetitive motif, then it's not noise.
I was just going to ask you that. If that was one of the ground things. Or another opinion question. Repetition an enemy of improvisation?
Oh, it can be, for sure, because it's too easy to fall back on repetition when improvising because you're not sure of what to do next, and that can end up making things mighty boring for the audience, right?
Yeah, you know, strategies we develop in grade school when the teacher calls on you, you ask to repeat the question, not because you didn't hear it, you're buying time. So
yep.
It's kind of like treading water, right? And you're doing it at the listener or the gig goer's expense.
Totally.
Okay. So you say there's a responsibility that you owe a gig goer. Even if it's, you know, I remember doing this gig and we're sharing the it's two different stages, two different chambers, but the same pad, Ancient Belgique in Brussels. And it's fucking Amin Ali and his father, Rashid.
The pressure.
Wow. I mean, yeah, Rashid was wearing a turtle shell on his head for a half. And but Amin go, you know, Amin quit bass. He don't do anything anymore. But he says to me, this is one of these gigs where you just make it up. And like I'm thinking, that makes it easier?
I've always been allergic to learning songs and repeating them. That was one of the good stresses, I think, in Subarachnoid Space after the first little while. The first several years were everything was purely improv. And then we started to develop some structures that we could use. And then we started to develop songs that had more structure, but still lots of free space inside. And finding that balance was super, super hard. I hate playing the same thing over and over and over. It's just not what works for me.
No, and also I think, you know, being influenced by Jimmy. Jimmy never, if you listen to the bootlegs, he's never doing them songs live the same way.
Right,
and
right.
They had that motherfucker on a treadmill, right? Feeding him speed, making him do all, but he still tried to innovate as much as he could. Beautiful man.
Yeah.
Beautiful man. But you're right, the search of the balance, because there's no golden yardstick out there.
Right, and if you don't have some structure to work with your co-members with,
yeah,
then it's really easy to suddenly realize we just wasted half an hour of the audience's time because we didn't know what the hell we were doing. Because we got lost.
Yeah.
Right? It happens, and it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine a lot of it's about listening. Look, we're at the end of the second hour. July 6, 2021. This is my Peterson special guest, Mason Jones. Hold 10 for hour. Think! July 6, 2021. It's the third hour of the Walk for Pedro show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Start off the third hour. Collision Stories, yet another prize, Mason Jones. And this is an excerpt of Antlub Obscurité, number one. Then I took your name out of Netherlands, Human Counterpoint. It's a great name for a band, I took your name, okay. And Mike Cooper after that, Wetropolis, Jalon Durian. Yeah, incredible guitar man, Mike Cooper. Egregious Phil's Bin. Well, pun rock there, huh? Wampa Seta, the Balls to the Walls version. And finally, another prod from Mason Jones. Another excerpt also. Noise Birds with A Dance Loved by a Lost Friend. So enlighten us to these two prods, Mason.
Yeah, so Noise Birds is a project with my friends from Suisho no Fune from Tokyo.
Fune, boat.
Yep. Crystal Ship.
Ah, okay.
Yep. And
also a Doors song.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I've known them for years and years, and my drummer, my most common drummer, Mike Schoen, and I have played with them a couple of times and done some shows with them in Japan. And they were over here a couple of years ago, and we grabbed some time in our practice space and just set up recording gear and recorded what turned out to be really great stuff. So that came out on an album in the UK last year, and that's an excerpt from the kind of the longest track on there.
Now, you said you played over there. One time I did a tour, 22 gigs, 22 days. It's hard to tour over there, but I got to tell you, good sound at the live houses.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, these tiny places with massive sound systems, right?
Yeah, gigantic, good systems in these tiny pads.
Yep.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, they really take care to do it right.
Okay. And so, but this is the other side. Instead of you guys going over there and do a Crystal Ship, they came here and did Noise Birds?
Yeah, so Noise Birds is the name that we came up with for the four of us playing together.
Okay, and Collision Stories.
Collision Stories. So a little while back, you had Michael Gendreau on your show. And so Michael's in Collision Stories with me.
Oh, with turntables?
He does a little bit of everything, but turntables very commonly. Doing just amazing sound crafting using the turntables as the kind of the sound source.
Is he the foundation in that proj?
We are super, super equal in that thing.
Okay. What about with the improv? Is it always like who's going to go first kind of thing?
It can be, right? So all the Collision Story stuff is totally improv. We just set up and start playing, and we've kept it going for quite a while because it's one of those quartets that just sort of worked from day one, where we had a natural way of listening to each other. And with four people, there will often be one or even two who just aren't doing anything at the moment, just kind of listening and waiting.
Yeah.
It's finding the right time for the right thing is the key,
Yeah. Like writing a script in real time as you're doing it for people.
Yeah.
It's a trip. Okay, we're going to get to trance. What are your first things? Finally,
yeah,
at the end
cool.
of the show. And,
cool.
I didn't know the chrono. I'm so sorry, Mace. And this is Film at 11. I remember the talking heads on the TV, right? Film at 11.
Yeah.
Watt for Pedro Show. Last music for this edition. Film at 11 from Trance. And then we had this from Brighton, England. This is part one of two. Tomorrow we'll play second part. First part. Project called Day Glow Explodin' Super Infinite. This is Carl and Wow. Yeah, that's a little psychedelia. And the tune's called In the Stormlight, The Spores Tell Me Something Secret. See, titles, right? And,
yeah,
and then you don't have to worry about fucking anything to coincide with the lyrics, because there ain't, you know, that's what I mean. There's something about titles in instrumental music that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then finally, Trance, All the Mirrored Ways.
Yeah, that one's getting into my sort of orchestral period.
No, tell us about Trance.
Yeah, Trance was pretty much the first band name that I, you know, that I used for my stuff, starting around, was it 87? And I used that for a good while, going through sort of industrial rock songs into noise, into sort of orchestral stuff. So that All the Myriad Ways track was when I was playing around with keyboards and samplers and doing almost soundtracky type stuff. So,
oh, you mean like the string sessions at the
Super Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I was just experimenting with a lot of different stuff at the time, trying to figure out how to fit it all together. And Trance was the name that I used until I had to give up using Trance because techno and raves came along.
Right, it turned into a whole fucking genre name, right?
They stole the whole meaning from me.
The same thing happened to me. I had a buddy. Hey, why don't I want you to come here, experience some drum and bass. So he brings me up to West Hollywood. And yeah, it's two guys in a sweater. And you know, when sweaters work in these machines, they're like, no bass players. No drum.
Bass, man.
But it was kind of interesting. It was so fucking impossible to do, even if you tried. The kick drum patterns were like, there's no way a drummer could have played this shit. And the bass
right.
notes were like 256 notes, you know, shit.
Right.
I was like, wow. But the whole idea of the genre name of the name, so you had to, like, drop the name because you got bum-rushed by a big segment of the society.
Yeah, it was good though, yeah. Time for a change anyway.
Okay, but you never envisioned trance music as like a dance thing, right?
No,
you
never.
Know, I was helping Portal for Powers, and I asked Pear, the singer man, about those genre names, you know? Like, how do you know what chill wave is, Pear? And how do you know what, whatever.
Oh, there's so many.
Crush vibe, and he goes, Mike, it's easy. It's all the BPM. Okay.
I guess.
Humans are so funny. You know, I want to be me. How? Just like you.
Right.
Well, not me. You mean him that looks kind of like her that kind of looked like him, kind of you. Yeah, we're in this perpetual trippy kind of thing of wanting to belong when, yeah, we know it's kind of jive in a way. Like a shortcut, right? A name. We had a cat on, Aiden Baker from Berlin. Nice man.
Sure.
Yeah, nice man. And I asked him about this thing. Why? Because he says he puts tags on the names of his music for the internet. And he says that's how people know how to find it. I said, you don't want to surprise people?
Yeah, like on Bandcamp, right? Yeah, you put the put some labels on it to make it easier for people to find the connections. It helps the algorithm, right?
Helps organize the ghettos.
Yeah. It's all tribal, right? It's all just tribal in nature.
Well, what about another understanding that music is music, and maybe that's nonsense? Maybe. I'm just putting it out there.
Music is music, for sure. I mean, you know, it's not like I listen to just the same thing every day, right?
I can imagine. Mm-hmm. No, the way listening to what you do, you must, yeah. Like, you got bit, right, when you were young, and it just never went away. And it's a beautiful thing. It's inspiration. So honored to have you on the show, Mason. Thank you so much.
Likewise. Thank you.
Okay, right back. And any other new stuff, shit, come back on the show. Let's listen and talk about it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, best place is charnel.com. That's charnel.com. That's my my label. It's pretty quiet these days, but it's my label, and it'll bring you to all the links to my
site. Right, it's your site. It's like having your own fantasy. Thanks so much, yeah. Really, truly. Let's keep on keeping on.
Likewise.
People, yes, sir. People, it's been a July 6, 2021 edition one for Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.